Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to For the Love of Learning. This is Christine DiDomenico, your host, along with Simone Padour, my co-host, or we are co-hosts together.
Hello,
Simone.
Hello.
So today we are talking with Tiffany Thien about improving student scores in the classroom. And Tiffany is a teacher in Florida, and she started using the tools of access consciousness in her classroom with special ed students and has had a dramatic change in their test scores. And if you live in the U.S., you know that kids are tested quite a bit now, and there's a lot of focus on testing. And Tiffany was able to change some pretty massive things for kids in the classroom and in turn create change in their scores. So hi, Tiffany. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you, Christine. Hi, Simone.
Hello.
And, you know, we talked to Tiffany probably about a year ago, maybe a little over a year ago, when we were working with the Access School. And Tiffany was just starting out in Access. And so a year later, I was just telling her what a dramatic change that I see. I've never met Tiffany in person, but I see her on Facebook and we chat a little bit. And what an amazing change in you, Tiffany, in a year as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you very much. Like I said, Access has really changed my life. It's kind of like a blueprint, and the tools that with Access are phenomenal. They work with anything and everything. You can change anything.
Yeah. Yeah, and you recently did a really cool video presentation about what you're going to talk about today. So let's make sure we have the link to that that we can add to this listing for the show as well. So Tiffany, you want to just jump in and tell us about your experience?
Okay, yeah, I sure will. What had happened was I've been teaching special ed for 20 years. I started off in Miami, Florida for the first 10 years, and I've always been a really good teacher because in order to teach special ed, you have to be special education yourself. And I've always suffered with dyslexia and ADHD. So whenever the kids were frustrated or whenever they had a hard time, I kind of understood what it was that they were frustrated with or what they were seeing. Mm-hmm. Or how they were having a hard time concentrating. Because when you have ADHD, it's hard to really focus, and you have a lot of chatter. And then when you add dyslexia to it, it's really hard to even read what is asked of you. And unless you have a teacher or something that's in front of you that's very animated or something that can help you focus or keep your attention, it's just really hard. It's like being in Charlie Brown school where you hear, it just doesn't work. And when it comes to special education kids, you have to relate it to something they already know. And this even works with regular ed kids. If I was going to sit here and explain to you a textbook manual or some kind of manual on how to repair an engine or some kind of other machinery, and if you're not familiar with the terminology, it's going to be like just staring at a bunch of empty words and a bunch of empty processes. It's like, okay, it doesn't make sense. So I've learned how to relate real-world experiences and try to relate it in with math. A lot of the things that the kids really get was money. And they're really street smart, and they know since a little kid that this much money can get me this sucker. And then as they get older, this much money can get me that candy bar. And then when they get older, this much money can get me that video game. So they always understood money. So I always use that to my example because I'm helping them relate with, you know, decimals and percentages and going from there. And when it comes to now testing nowadays, they changed a lot. Like back when I started teaching, they did the HSCT, which is one test a year that was made basically like the SAT. And then as they did other forms of state testing, I noticed that it was a lot of manipulative words. And I'll never forget when I was interning back in 2000, one of the questions my second graders had was, if Johnny had 5 apples and he put 2 in his pocket, how many does Johnny have? Well, to a second grader, they're going to see 5 take away 2 equals 3, but the real answer was 5. They're just in his pocket. So that's how I had to start teaching. That's when I realized I don't need to teach math as much as I need to teach self-esteem. Because the kids understood the math. They just needed cognitively to think on that person's level and what they're trying to state to them. And then the more I started teaching, the more I noticed that they developed an area of learned helplessness that they think, well, since I have this label, I'll never be good enough. So why bother to try? And that trend started on from 2000 up. So it was this past year, I was having a really hard time staying in education. The politics have gotten really bad. I love the kids, but it was, you know, being held accountable for things that were so far beyond my control. It was so stressful to me, and it wasn't fair to my family, but I went ahead and went back in. And that's when I found Access Consciousness, because life was not working. And I found Dr. Heer's book, Being You, Changing the World. And I started listening to that, and that's when he started saying the basic tools were, how does it get better than this? How does it get easier than this? What else is possible? Everything's the opposite of what it appears to be. An interesting point of view I have is point of view. So shortly after I found the book, I was offered a position. I decided to go back to be a substitute teacher. I thought, well, I'll sub a little bit because I still like the kids. And I started subbing at a school that I can't particularly name its name, but it's a Title I school, and it was a failing school for 3 years in a row. And they could never keep the teachers in the school. It was a revolving door. This particular area has dealt with a lot of heroin overdoses. I think from June to August alone, they had over 400 heroin overdoses in this area. And ironically, most of those kids were related to a lot of those people that overdosed. So by the time I got into the classroom, a lot of these kids come from migrant families, homelessness, poverty. So it was a really tough situation to go into, but I didn't mind because I love working with kids anyway. So I started telling myself, well, because they were all, no matter what I did or said, they just didn't have any drive or self-esteem. And I thought, well, shoot, I'm kind of in the same boat. What if I taught these things in this classroom? What's it going to hurt? And that's when my principal asked me to stay. And she goes, please be a permanent teacher here. We only have 1 year left. I'm like, okay. And this was in November. The kids tested in April. So over top of the marker board, I put how does it get easier than this? On the door, I put, how does it get better than this? On the other side of the marker board, I put everything's the opposite of what it appears to be. Nothing is the opposite of what it appears to be. And on the other side, I put interesting point of view. I have this point of view. And just by using those tools, as well as, like, I worked with the kids as far as putting them in learning groups. So I would find an introverted kid and an extroverted kid, and I would put them together. Because I noticed that if I put 2 introverted kids together, they would never speak up. And if I put 2 extroverted kids together, you know, your talkers, they would never get anything done. So I started putting them together according to their personalities. And the ones that are your big talkers, and all of you teachers know those. Those are the kids that are always talking. They can never stay in their seat. They're always running around. I made them in charge. And I noticed when I gave them a responsibility and I gave them, you know, hey, you're in charge of this assignment, and I always gave them a problem. Okay, guys, you do problem number 1, you do problem number 2, and they solved it as a team. So that helped a lot with getting started. Mm-hmm. And so that with just that alone, and this is like math. So, and math has really changed. A lot of people out there who are not teachers, the 6th, 7th, and 8th grade math that I'm teaching now was – back in 2005 is what was in 9th, 10th, and 11th grade math. Now they're expected to know this in 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. So cognitively, these kids really can't grasp a lot of these concepts. I mean, this is really tough stuff. And I'm dealing with kids that are operating 4 to 5 grade levels below their grade level. They were just arbitrarily passed. So I had to make it fun. And I'm thinking, okay, well, let's just use Access with these kids, because my purpose is if I can just get them up one grade level, then I've done more than anybody else has done in a while. And they haven't had a teacher, a solid teacher, for almost 3 years. So, like I said, I had them in the groups. I would put word problems up on the board, and they would, oh, miss, I can't do this. This is so hard. Okay, how does it get easier than this? And it was very important to have that on your door, because subconsciously they read it every time they walked in my room and every time they left my room. And you don't realize how much you subconsciously read things. And I really noticed that when I started putting these as posters all around the room, especially some of the kids who couldn't speak English. I had one of my aides was Mexican, so she translated it in Spanish for my Spanish kids, because my Spanish was not very good. And I had I knew some Creole, but not much. So I had one of my Creole friends translate it in Creole for me, because all I knew was "sac passe, na boule." I mean, that's all I knew. You know, "sac passe" means "hey, what's up?" So by having it in different languages, and just by using it, just start replacing it with your everyday language. And instead of using Bloom's taxonomy, now you have your higher order thinking questions. Forget that. Whenever they start, you know, whenever you have them doing a question and they solve it, okay, guys, how does it get easier than this? What else is possible? What else can we do to make this easier? I just replace all of that instead of with the Access talk. And by the time April came, I was just astounded, because when the scores came back, like, a lot of the kids didn't give up on the testing like I thought they would, because a lot of them will usually Christmas tree the test results and then put their head down. These kids really did try, which was like, whoa, okay. And helping them with their self-esteem helped out a whole lot too, because as they were coming into the class, they would bring the drama from home. And, you know, everybody knows when you're a teacher in a Title I school, not only are you the teacher, you're the counselor, you're the mother, you're the nurse, you're the referee. And sometimes you got to give them, my biggest hope was, well, let me give these kids some coping skills. So that's how I started teaching them, you know, when mom and dad were either drunk or beating each other up at home. You hear this because they tell you. I taught them, well, go into your room, and whenever that happens, just keep telling yourself, how does it get better than this? How does it get better than this? Everything's the opposite of what it appears to be. Nothing is the opposite of what it appears to be. And I need to add this too. This was inspired by Dr. Dane here. I always told them every morning when we started, after we did the morning announcements, we live our lives with ease and joy and glory. That really did change a lot. And with the Access Consciousness Clearing Statement, as an educator, you can't just go in there, right, wrong, good, bad, pod, poc, all night, because now you're going to have your administration going after you thinking you're crazy. So in order to teach them pod and poc, because we're allowed to do pod and poc for short, and I'm like, you know what, how can I use this for my advantage? And there's a famous meme that goes around, and it has that horse, and he's tied to a plastic chair. And I told the kids, that's your point of creation, point of destruction at the same time. And they're going, what do you mean, miss? And I'm like, well, when that horse was a colt, it was tied to a fence post. And no matter what it did, it could not break free from that being tied there. So that was the point of creation. That moment it learned it cannot break from that bound, that, you know, being bound there. It was also the point of destruction, because it was taught that it can't break free from those binds there. It can't do it. Well, think about it when you're little. Didn't your parents tell you never to talk to strangers?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, when you get older, don't you need to talk to strangers, like when you go to school to find the directions to your next classroom?
Yeah.
Well, isn't that the point of destruction? If you never ask the teachers or the principal where to go, because they're technically a stranger, isn't that a point of destruction? And isn't it defeating you?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's look at this horse. Isn't this defeating it? It's tied to that fence post, but it's tied to that chair. But look at that big, beautiful field behind it. It still thinks it has to stay tied to the chair. And then that's how they were able to understand pod and pocking. So I did that to cut through the red tape. And whenever they would say, oh, I can't do something, well, we're going to pod and pock that right now. What else is possible? And that's all I kept doing in the classroom, besides a lot of your basic, you know, like Kagan exercises where you put them according to their personality types. in their learning styles. That helps out a lot.
Well, wow. I have so many questions, I'm not even sure where to start.
Go for it. Hopefully I can help you.
Well, I mean, one of the things that was coming up when you were talking is, like you were mentioning, like, these kids, you know, had been, like, they weren't failed. They were just, like, pushed through. And, like, what did you do? Like, because they have, like, huge gaps in their learning, particularly in math, which I know is a foundational, you know, you build upon it. At least that's what I was taught as a kid. You have to build on all these sort of different things that you've learned, right, to be able to do the next thing. And I know I missed out on a few of those, and that was absolute hell for me. So what is it you do as a teacher to catch that so that they can move forward?
The most important thing with math is to stay with the order of operations. So when it comes into the algebra, if you focus a lot on the decimal placement, teaching them how to, you know, multiply single digits, double digits with decimals, I focus a lot of that. And actually, I would make that part of their bell work, a lot of the foundation stuff. And fractions.
Yeah.
Thank goodness the fractions started at the beginning and it was still part of the curriculum, but I would bring it back down to their level. And I used their competition against them. I really did. What I did was, like, as you're placing them in different personality groups, you always have an extrovert with an introvert, because that introvert is going to keep the that quiet kid's going to keep that talkative kid grounded. And when they start working together, and I always had a reward for whenever they learn. Now, some people use Jolly Ranchers. The kids love the Jolly Ranchers, but a lot of times they go, oh, that's too much sugar. But sometimes the kids don't ever, you know what, they deserve a little bit of sugar every once in a while. They don't have access to some of these candies. They never even, you know, this is like a huge treat to them. So you have to think of what it is that they want. So, and then I would, you know, everything was a competition. So, and they learn more from each other than they did with me. So as you're following with the order of operations, you know, PEMDAS, parentheses, so that I taught them how to look in that parentheses, and exponents. So I had to tell them the number. If you multiply the number so many times, and I would have, like, I was lucky one particular year, that year, because I had triplets. So I would use it, you know, to the third power. So if I have this one and this one and this one, so I'm going to multiply this times this times this. So when I made it more concrete, it was much easier for them.
Yeah.
Now, they have these things called active expressions, but now with the computers and stuff, you could get, like, little clickers that the kids can answer in on that goes right into your computer. I paid, like, $70 for mine, and you can probably get them even cheaper now if you look on eBay. And that's what I did, was I purchased the classroom performance system, and it was a clicker system, and I called them little geeks. So this was Geek Team 1, Geek Team 2, Geek Team 3. So they had their geek, and then they would do, they had a timer on the board, and they had to answer it. So they would compete with each other because they wanted that candy, and they were using their competitive edge against them. Because if they don't want to learn, I don't care if you can walk on water or if you can, you know, ride a unicycle with flaming bagpipes. They don't care. They have to want it.
No.
So by giving them things that they wanted, using their competition against them to where they wanted to learn it, and having an extrinsic award like that, it really helped a lot. And when they would get stuck, we would try working it and try working it. How does it get easier than this? And I don't care if I took longer with a lot of the curriculum. Like, we were, like, 2 weeks behind with the rest of the regular ed kids, but I didn't care. These guys were 4 years behind. But as long as you use, like, bell work, I use the first 15 minutes of class, and I would put a difficult fraction up there. And the first person who could get it gets the award, so they would sit there and they'd just run with those pencils just as fast as they could. And then the one that would answer it, then they would write and show how they did it. And it would be really amazing on how they would teach the rest of the class how they solved it. Because I didn't even think about solving it in such a way that these kids did, but the other kids understood it.
Yeah.
So that's how using, you know, it's everything's the opposite. Everything is using access tools and stuff like that. It just, they moved ahead so well.
Wow. Wow. So did you ever come across like a kid that as soon as you mentioned the word math, that their whole brain just shut down, or was that most of your class?
That was most of the class. What I did was I had to eat a lot of humble pie, and I stood up in front of the room, and I said, hey, kids, look, I didn't learn how to read until I was in, like, fourth grade. You know, I understand. You're made to feel like you're dumb. You're made to feel like you're stupid, but you're not. What if I told you you're really, really smart in a really, really different way? Because that's what happened to me, and I can promise you that's what happened to you. So I'll show them like how I'm dyslexic and how I really read things, and I teach them. Well, I had to start taking a yellow highlighter piece of paper to focus my eyes on what I'm reading, because if I didn't, I wouldn't be able to read the passage. And then I even taught them. You know, I didn't even know as I'm reading, I'm sitting here singing, you know, all the songs coming in my head. So if you become humble with them and explain to them you're the same, that builds their trust.
Yeah.
And then once they start trying, and even though they fail, they're like, just always praise them. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
You know what? How does it get easier than this? Who else knows how to do this? Okay, Johnny, get up there. Okay, Johnny's showing them how to do it. John, I would have never thought about doing that. What do you think, Billy? Do you think that this is an easier way? Where do you not understand it? Because maybe you could show us something. I always made it to where we were a team. And I was more of the facilitator instead of the instructor person. If you facilitate it and kind of like steer them, they build their trust with you more. But if you stand up at the front and say, I'm the dictator and, you know, that you're going to work what I do, you will not have them. They've been bullied all their lives. So forget it. You're not going to get it. And
so
one thing that they loved more than anything was cutie oranges. Yes.
So did that change for you the way, once you found the access tools, did you change the way you related to kids, or was this just how you've always been with kids?
I kind of been with kids like that a lot, but I never had a way to reach them. I just always show them, hey, look, I'm human, but this is it. Let's put a Band-Aid on it and let's get to work. I never had a way to teach them how to look at I never had a way to give them a tool. And that's what I loved about Access, because not only were they able to use it in the classroom, they were able to use it for the hardships they were dealing with at home. And that's when you begin to become a little bit more empowered. Because it empowered me more, because I was able to teach them how to do it. And then when they start using the lingo, it takes about a month or two before they start using it every day in a classroom. But once they do, that's when it takes over. And it's like, wow.
I remember that. I was working in the Middle East, and I had all these little kids. And there isn't a whole lot of question in the language of Arabic. So question really wasn't in their vocabulary at all, even in English. And so they would just demand things. And I was teaching them about questions. And like, what if you ask me a question? Well, maybe I'll give it to you. So we'd been doing this for a few months, and this little boy said, Miss, I need glue. And this little girl hollered back at him, and she said, that is not a question.
Yes. And it works together like that in the classroom, just like that. And you will have one or two kids that will try to find something wrong with you, because that is where they're operating from. But I would destroy and uncreate my relationship with each and every student when I left work at night. I would go down my classroom, and I had 180 of them. So I would destroy and uncreate each and every one of them after I left. That was a big key for me. And I forgot about that, and I highly recommend that to anybody. Once you destroy and uncreate your relationship every day, and I learned that toward the middle of it, the time, my life got a lot easier with them, and I was able to gain a lot of trust. Yeah, there's a couple kids that just you can't save, you can't rescue them all, even though you wish you could. But just by being in the room and in the environment, they did change. Just not the way we thought that they would, but they did do some changes, and they were able to have the tools to help them with themselves at home.
Yeah. So I have a question about that. So, I mean, because all of us teachers have come across those kids that, you know, you can throw a book of tools at them and it isn't really going to change all that much. And it's their choice, right? It's, you know, they choose whether they change. So as a teacher, I mean, I know it's sometimes hard to see the possibilities that, you know, this kid could go for and they don't choose it. So what is something that you've used to just go, you know what, you know, whatever, you know, like what do you use? Is what I'm trying to get to.
Okay. Like, for example, I had this one particular student, we'll call him Juan.
Okay.
That's not his name though. Okay. Juan didn't want to do anything. He didn't want to learn. He didn't care. All he wanted to do was leave. He had this thing going on. So what I had to do was teach, okay, Juan, this is the situation. I'm not going to ask you to do anything you don't want to do, but I can't have you leave the classroom either. So until you learn this, so it took me a while to learn. Okay, so for him sitting in the chair for the entire class, all right, if you could do it for a day, I'll give you the same reward as you would give the kids if they got the problem right. And see, this is the beauty of it. The kids know each other very well. And they know the difficulties, the real difficult ones have. So they don't mind that that kid gets a reward because they see where it's coming from. So it's like, okay, Juan, if you could stay in this room every day, at first it was to the end of the day. Okay, here's your treat. Mm-hmm. And then it was, okay, you got to do it every day for 2 days in a row, every other day. And then it was every 3 days. And then it was once a week. So then we slowly built them up on that. And as they were doing that, it's like, wow, you know, I really appreciate you respecting me like that. I really respect you for doing that for me. You know, how does it get better than that? Juan, I'm telling you what, I think you're amazing. You don't see it yet, but you will. And then I just kept with the positive reinforcement, even though you said, called me everything but, you know, my name. But it's like, you know, I understand. You must have a lot of people that must treat you that way at home, and I get it. I'm going to let you sit here, and I'm going to let you, you know, stew it off. I'm not going to make you do anything you don't want to do just yet. I really do hope you join the rest of us because that's really what I want. In the meantime, you know, if you don't want to participate, just stay there with your head down if that's what you have to do. And then it took me about 3 or 4 weeks to build them up to that because now they know you're not forcing them to do something. Some of them will just say, well, I don't care, I want to do it anyway. And sometimes, like that particular one, I did have to take him to the principal's office a couple times because it was like, okay, you're not going to give me attention this way, I'm going to make sure you give me attention that way. But that's what they wanted, was to get out. And then what I would do is, because the kids knew that they were acting out to shut down the class, but we just kept talking as if we didn't hear him.
Yeah.
And then he would give up and sit still. And then it got to the point where the students started praising him, too. You know, Juan, you're really cool when you calm down. I mean, then your kids help you. And it does work. I mean, people are like, oh, you can't do that. Well, you know, sometimes quit being the dictator in the classroom because that doesn't work anymore. You have to pick your battles. And if you want that kid to want to be something, you know, sometimes just sitting there is a big deal for them. Because, like, this particular one kid had PTSD. Yep. And he wanted to escape. So it was like, you have to do what you can to give it a safe environment. But one thing I did come down on is when the kids started picking on each other, I would go right after the kid that started it. It's like, excuse me, these are my children in my room, and you're a child in my room, and I will protect you the same way I'm going to protect him. Don't you dare talk to my kids this way. I hope you make a better decision. But I made it. I only had to do that once or twice. And once they realized that Miss Dean isn't kidding, I better chill out. Then they, you know, it builds up such a rapport that like other kids who weren't in my class, if they were disrespecting me in the hallway, all my kids would and go after that kid. And it's like no. But they don't have anybody that respects them. So I'm trying to teach them boundaries and how to respect each other as well as respect themselves. And I don't always teach math.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because sometimes, you know, if you have a kid coming in, because now you got to be careful, because once they figure out that they can sometimes dictate how the class goes, they like to bring the trauma and the drama up.
Yeah.
But every once in a while, they'll bring in some trauma and drama that they've seen that happened at the bus stop or that they've seen happen at that, and I'm like, wow, let's sit back and think about it. If Susie punched Johnny, what would make Susie want to punch Johnny?
Well, he was, you know, because he was disrespecting her and calling her sweet.
Okay, no. Think about it. If he's disrespecting her, how miserable does he have to want to pick on somebody?
Oh, well, I do that.
Okay, well, that's what's going on with them at home. So how can we be understanding of that? So that we know that he was picking on Susie, but at the same token, how can we help Susie feel protected? How can we... So I did a lot of that, too. How did it get better?
Yeah.
What else is possible? Well, what we could have done is we... And try to steer them into... you have to actually teach them better decisions because nobody taught them. I've had kids that didn't even know that it was impolite to stand on the dinner table. They would be in the cafeteria running on the table and be like, guys, what are you doing? Do you do that at home?
Yeah.
Okay, well, you know, it's inappropriate. If you were in Publix, you know, Publix was a grocery store down here. If you're in the local grocery store, you're going to get chased by a police officer thinking you're crazy. You know, and they're like, huh? And that's how I had to teach them social norms. I mean, some of these kids weren't even taught the basics at all. It's sad.
Yeah. Well, what I find interesting, too, is like, go ahead, Christine.
Simone, go ahead.
Well, I just find it interesting, like, when you're talking about building rapport and stuff like that, and these kids that are coming from difficult situations, like, you're really creating an environment where they feel nurtured and safe.
Yeah, that's the most important thing. And we were all taught that as educators, that Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And when you're dealing with a Title I school, these kids aren't getting all those needs.
Yeah.
Bottom line. And some of them come to school just to eat. And that's what a lot of people don't understand. Or they come to school because they don't want to get beat up. Or for them, a punishment is being grounded from school, which was something I learned that was really hard for me to cope. But yeah, the mother would punish them from going to school and make them stay home and babysit.
Wow.
And that's when you start, and that's when you have to start open. They don't care. I mean, and it really bothered me because, you know, a lot of these kids, we would have their education meetings to help them move ahead, and the parents wouldn't even bother to show up. And, I mean, it got to the point where the parents would avoid the phone call so much that I would call the kid in the room and, hey, you got a cell phone?
Yeah.
Call your mom. And call the mom, and I'd take the cell. Hi, Mrs. Smith, I've been trying to get a hold of you. Because they won't answer the phone call from the school, but they'll answer their child's cell phone. It's that bad in some areas. I think that was the most heartbreaking thing for me. Was that it, you know, happened like that, a lot of it.
So what do you think, kids got out of it? Like, sorry, go ahead, Christine, I'm interrupting again.
No, I just wanted to add something to what you were saying, too, that the nurturing and caring that you give the kids is not just this gentleness all the time. It's whatever they require. Like if they're, getting on each other, you would say, no, this is not okay. So it wasn't all like sweet and nice. And it's being in, you know, in Access, we use the term allowance and no judgment, like being in allowance of everything that they choose and not accepting their behaviors, not accepting the I can't, not accepting the nasty behaviors that they give to each other. There are these, like, no, this isn't okay. And that is also nurturing and caring for your students.
Mm-hmm.
And you seem to be really good at that. Really. I mean, I'm not sure that, are you aware of how you are just being that energy that they require, you know, that's changing them. you know, even without, if you take the math aside, the energy that you be is so kind and caring and nurturing to the kids, that that creates change in itself.
I didn't think of it that way. I just thought, you know, the way I always thought of it was, these are my kids and these are somebody's baby. And as long as they're in my care, they're my babies. And, you know, it's pretty hard, you know, when you have 6th, 7th, and 8th graders calling them babies, but I always looked at them that way. And a lot of them weren't taught social norms. A lot of them weren't taught how to have healthy boundaries. And my most important thing was to teach them how to have healthy boundaries so that later on nobody else will take advantage of those boundaries. And that was my main intention. But I didn't realize I was creating that type of an environment. And now that you put it that way, you're correct, because being an allowance means, yeah, to, you know, to deal with their faults. But at the same token, they've never been taught, and being an allowance isn't allowing them to abuse themselves. They don't know the difference. So thank you for that. I didn't see it that way. How does it get better than that?
You're welcome. Yeah.
One of the things that I was looking at when you were talking about, like, their parents and stuff, and then when Christine mentioned, you know, like, you know, not looking at the, you know, the kindness and caring of you as being part of this, like, and I'm going to lose my train of thought. I can feel it leaving the station.
No.
Oh, I know what it is. like you mentioned, like having ADHD or dyslexia, and I'm also thinking of like these kids having these parents. Like a lot of people would go, oh, well, you know, these poor kids, they have these things going on, or they have these parents. What have you noticed actually is a gift out of those things? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, what have you given them?
I think those kids are, gosh, you know, people always sit there and brag about the good kids in the class and the ones that go on through college and stuff, but these kids are the diamonds in the rough. These kids are your street smart kids. They're more aware than the other kids are. And these kids are more capable of love and compassion than the regular ed kids were. Like, I taught both, and the regular ed kids were okay, and I loved them just as much. I love them all the same, but the special education kids, the ADHD kids, they were actually more brilliant, more caring, had a bigger capacities of allowance than I can even put my words to. And a lot of people go, oh yeah, but my test scores will go down and I'm not going to get my promotion and I'm not going to get my highly competent rating and highly, you know. And I'm like, you know, it doesn't matter. Because once you move those ESC kids, once you they trust you. And once they see that you really do care about them, and it's more than just the numbers on the paper, and you teach them more well-roundedly, because they need more than just math. They need more than just language arts. They need to be taught as a whole. Those kids will move more mountains, I've noticed, than the regular ed kids. Actually, I have a couple that's really moved on.
So it's almost like they choose this mammoth task, if you will, of like, you know, if I can get through this, I can get through anything.
Actually, and I tell them that too, because I think a lot of it is because when they would walk in, you know, in the classrooms and stuff, and we would start this, I'd say, you guys are the brilliant ones, you know that, right? No, because, you know, Susie's sister's on the honor roll, and she's way smarter than me. And I'm like, really? Well, I don't know about you, but did you ever notice that Susie's sister's really book smart, but when it comes to, like, really cool stuff, you're smarter? Huh?
Yeah.
Well, think about it. It's not how smart are you, it's where are you smart. I would rather be in a dark alley with you kids, because you guys will help me find a way out, than I would Susie's sister. She can't even find a way through Walmart, you know? And that's how I would talk to them. And they were like, yeah, you're right, miss, you're right. So I teach him. I always told him, it's not how smart are you, it's where are you smart. And whenever they would show, yeah. And that's another thing, too, I would give them a chance to show their gift or their hobby. And when they would walk in the morning, too, that's another thing that teachers told, hey, what did you do over the weekend? Did you guys see anything cool? Oh, my gosh, guess what's coming on? Doctor Strange? Ah! You know, and I would really make it a big deal, and I would share my geeky side with them. And they loved that because they don't have that. Yeah. And if you just start sharing more of you and stop being the – because a lot of people, they don't want to do that. They like to keep it all straight and narrow. These are children. You're probably the only person that cares for them right now. You know, and you don't realize – how much of a change you make to some of those kids only went to, I'm going to get emotional right now, but one of the little girls told
me
that the only reason why
leaking,
she went to school,
so.
The only reason why she went to school was because to see my class. And I was like, really? So it's like, it's really amazing on how these kids can really, they can really move mountains all they need is just one person to care. And a lot of them are so neglected, they don't know what that is. So just like those little random, you know, and not only do you teach them math, and because that's what I was doing with teaching math, but teaching them social norms and teaching them rules and teaching them how to behave, they don't know any of this stuff. And that's what people are, they always assume that they're bad, and they start yelling at them, what are you doing, blah, blah, blah. Now the kid has already put up a defense, and you are representing mom's boyfriend that yells at them the same way. So now all learning has gone out the window, so you can forget it, because now they're not safe.
Well, I mean, I have to say, I've been leaking this entire time that you've been talking. I said to a friend when I was telling him about this show, I was like, yeah, we've got Tiffany on today, and I'm probably going to cry if you don't. How do you mean? I was like, her stories, they're just so amazing.
No, I'm so flattered. How does it get better than that? like I said, once people reach kids, and it's like I would still be in the classroom today. They actually started shutting the school down, and the numbers went down, and they started laying teachers off that were newly hired. And I went ahead and volunteered back in October, so I'm not back in the classroom anymore. But I would like to find a way to where I can help other teachers, just teaching them like these basic concepts. Because if you just take just a few minutes each day to teach basic social norms and rules and boundaries, and then instead of just sticking with curriculum, let them have an opportunity to shine. Let them have an opportunity to show you what they know how to do. And constantly use the access tools and have them all over the room. And it's like, okay, everything's the opposite of what it appears to be. Like whenever they would get stuck on a math problem, I can't do the fraction. How does it get easier in this? I don't know. Well, everything's the opposite of what it appears to be. Nothing's the opposite of what it appears to be. You're just saying that. Try doing it in my perspective. Well, look at that. You're just able to tell me to look in your perspective, so let's try looking at it in your perspective. Where is it you're getting stuck? This number here. Well, point to it. That one. Okay, where is it, on the top or the bottom? The top. So if you look at it as a fraction, if it's four-fifths, imagine this stick being broken into five pieces. So if I have four of them, that's four of five, and I have another stick that's in five pieces, but I took three of them. Let's put those pieces together. Oh, I mean, they have to be taught very concrete. Abstract does not work for these kids. If you teach them concrete and hands-on and then help them see from numbers and then, you got to be stupid. You have to. I mean, I made myself look like an idiot every day. You should have seen how I was trying, you know, up and down the aisle. You can't sit at your desk, that's for sure. I never sat at my desk, and they always made fun of me because I always wore jeans with sneakers and a shirt polo, you know, the school polo. And because I'm always on the floor.
Yeah.
I'm always sitting on my knees right next to them. Okay, well, let's try this and this and this. It's really more hands-on. And you got to get, like, if you have that one kid that's a showboat and that has to keep talking, put him in the front of the classroom.
Yeah.
Let them teach the lesson. Oh, my gosh. And they will be hilarious. I had more entertainment letting those kids teach the lesson than anything else.
That's great.
Well,
so I'm
what
curious.
You said about.
Go ahead, Christine.
About the gaps. It really can be just one little gap that they have that can change everything. My granddaughter, who's 11, was telling me that she was having trouble with decimals. So when we were sitting in Dunkin' Donuts yesterday, I had her write down a problem that similar to what she's doing in school on the paper bag. And it was something simple. She had this whole idea of, decimals is such a different thing. And when I said, just multiply it like you would multiply it if there were no decimals. And then I showed her how to move the decimal and where to put it. And then it was like everything disappeared with having problems with decimals. So it can be something so little, yet as teachers, we create this big thing, this big problem. What you're saying about like being a dictator too, it's like if we just relax as teachers, it's so much easier. Rather than the way I was when I first started teaching was I had to have control and I had to be in charge. But you're like flipping the whole idea of just be the facilitator, let them be in charge, guide them. And to me, that is, as a teacher, relax and let everything flow. And it's so much easier. And so all the teachers, anybody that's listening that's stressed out and feeling the pressure of testing, if you can just listen to what Tiffany is talking about and just relax and not feel like you have the weight of the world and the weight of changing them on your shoulders, they'll change. I mean, they're so open to change.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks for this. This is awesome.
Yes, and also, if you could find humor in it, make funny things. Like you were talking about decimals. Well, the place values, everything ends in THS, right? Hundredths, thousandths. They have a hard time with it. They look at it, and I try to show them with money. So after 99 pennies, we have a dollar. And they go, yeah, miss, but what about the thousandths? And then that's for the THS. I used to make fun of it. I said, here's the tenths, da, 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 da. And then you got the hundredths, da, 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 da. And then the thousandths, da, 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 da. You know, and you keep doing that. They'll understand you, da, 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 da. And they, once they find humor in it, it takes the fear away. A lot of it is just fear of performance. And because they don't get it, they're just shutting down because of fear of failure.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what's the worst that's going to happen? You got to erase the problem and do it again? But you're going to be mad at me. So what? Erase it. Am I beating you? No. Then am I mad at you? No. So do you understand? Yes. Or they'll come back with, no. But you have to let it once they realize, okay, you're a teacher, and you are an authority person, and as long as I show you respect, you'll show me respect, and there's no fear here. Nobody's a loser, and sometimes the best is what we can do for that day. Oh, and always tell them progress, not perfection, guys. Progress, not perfection.
Yeah.
That helps out a lot. That always helped me out a lot. Eve, I learned that in Dade County. Guys, progress, not perfection.
Okay.
Because they're so used
That's
to having
quote.
Being told that they have to have it perfect.
Yeah. So I have a question about, like, classroom sizes, because I know that that's a big topic for a lot of teachers out there. They've got, like, 30, 35 kids, 40 kids in some places. So what did you do to make that ease for you? Like,
well, most of the time they probably don't have an aide if they're in special education. If they're in a regular ed situation, and I understand because before they put the caps on that, I had 64 kids in a classroom, and that was a nightmare.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. But this was high school, though, and I was able to, you know, once again, you have to learn the respect from them. And when you're teaching, you're first like, okay, guys, these are the rules. Number one. nobody stands up, only one person stands up at a time because I'm dyslexic and I will climb you like a tree. I'm afraid. So when you tell them this is why this rule exists, number two, mm-hmm. you can't talk over top of me because I have a bigger mouth than you, and then I get louder, and then everybody gets a headache. And if it's something important, if we can hurry up and get through the lesson, then you get the free time at the end of the class. So, you know, wouldn't you rather have that? Or do you want me to sit up here and nag you all, period? So then they learn, okay, if I shut up, Miss Fien's going to hurry up and get through. Always put the kids in pairs if you can. When you have them individual, they're going to talk. So, yeah. And they're not going to pay attention, and you're going to be banging your head against the wall. So what I used to always tell them, and I still do, if you ever have me in the classroom, guys, this is how it works. The first 15, 20 minutes of class, you're going to let me teach it. And you're going to let me teach it quietly. Pay attention to me, because when I'm done, I'm going to turn you loose, and you can talk to your friends all you want to, just so you keep it at a level 2, which means just a little bit above a whisper. And you'll be able to talk yeah. all you want to. But if you keep interrupting me, you're going to be miserable because I'm not going to let you talk. You ain't going to be able to. It ain't going to work. And when you see it like that, they shut up. They'll give you the time because they want to talk to their friend. And once yeah. they learn that pattern, and they knew, okay, first 20 minutes she's talking, shh, everybody be quiet, let her say her thing. And then after I did the lesson, okay, yeah. who didn't understand that? And, of course, there'll be two or three students that will raise their hand. It's like, okay, before I turn you guys loose, let's try this, in which I had a smaller classes at the last school I was at, but at the bigger class, it's like, before I turn you guys loose, let's make sure, because, you know, we're all family here, and we can't move forward until everybody gets it. So how do we get it to where they understand it? And then that's when the other kids will usually jump in and say, okay, try it this way, bro. It's funny, too, because it's like it was in the inner city of Miami. Yo, bro, come here, let me show you how to do it, man. You got this? You got it? You understand it? You understand it? Uh-huh. And they'll go through it because they want to talk to their friends. And I get to tell them, okay, you can talk to your buddies, but remember, there's a responsibility. You have to have this paper done at the end of the class, or every problem is going to count yeah. against you. So it's kind of a morphing and training them, too. So, and at the first couple of weeks, they're not going to do good at all. They're going to fail like crazy because they're going to talk the whole time that they're only going to get one or two problems done because they're going to be babbling all through the class. Then as you teach, yeah. it's going to take you about a month and a half to teach this. But once you teach the classroom mm-hmm. norms, give I like to give the give and take. Like, you give me this much, yeah. I'll give you that much. You give me this much. And then they realize that everybody wins. Your classroom behaviors go down 99% because now you don't have that little Johnny that wants to pick a fight with you because you won't let him do what he needs to do. Also, yeah. those kids that like to tap their pencils and stuff, that was one thing I had a really hard time. I used to tell them, hey, guys, quiet hands. What do you mean? You're tapping your pencils and you're making my eye flicker. See this? I look like that squirrel on Ice Age. See this is going on? This ain't going to happen. So you're going to put your hands together like this until I get through with this, right?
Okay.
And, I mean, once they realize that you're not doing it to be a jerk, you're doing it to get through yeah. the lesson, and once yeah. you figure out who gets along with who, because it's going to take you about a month to figure out their personalities and what makes them tick and what doesn't, look for your talkers because those are who you want to make your allies. Don't fight them, because mm-hmm. if you fight them, you will lose. You will not win. You can't beat them. There's no way.
Yeah.
But if you do the give and take, give them some responsibility, make sure you compliment them as much as possible. And here's something else for you teachers that I wanted to share with you. You know how you have that administrator that just likes to pop in and just stare at your class
yep.
and leave, and everybody gets nervous? I'll use it to your advantage. Use it to your advantage. Mr. So-and-so come in. Oh, great to see you in here. John, tell them what you learned today.
I learned how to do that.
Isn't that fabulous? And then they won't bother you again. They hated observing me because the minute they come in, I always put them on the spot. Because I would always pick the kid that's always in trouble. Find the kid that's always in trouble. Raise
yeah.
them in front of that administrator and tell them, okay, Johnny, but oh, Mr. Smith, guess what? Johnny just figured out how to do this whole thing, didn't you, Johnny?
Yeah, no, look.
All right, tell him what you just did.
Well, I did this and that and this and that.
And then the principal will go, yeah, some stuff, and they run.
Works every time. But they don't want to do that. They do, especially those administrators that like to bully. You know, and everybody's had one. Use it to your advantage.
Yes.
The kids, and then whenever you get your observations, those kids will be your biggest allies. They will act like Stepford children.
It's making me laugh. It's marvelous.
That's so true. I'm supervising student teachers, and one of the student teachers is in a school that has it's physical education, so they pack the kids in the gym. She's got, you know, 80 11th and 12th graders or something or more, and she said that when she was developing relationships with kids, those kids would be her allies. So where before the girls wouldn't quiet down when she was asking them to quiet down, now she's got these other girls on her side that help her out, and it's made such a difference in her classroom management. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Cool.
I like the rough, tough ones. You know, they used to always make fun of me because it's like, how do you do it? And they always, my maiden name was Fesco. And I remember my administrator in Miami, Fesco, you know, you can teach just about anything. A good teacher can teach anything. And what makes you good is that you, the way you work with the kids. And once you, and they always said, when we always gave you the rough, tough kids. And at first I used to think they were punishing. And they go, no, because you're the only one that can deal with them. So I'm like, oh, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Education
mm-hmm.
is the only thing that punishes you for being great? Why did I sign up for this ticket? But then I started looking at it from a different point of view. And I was like, okay, well, if I'm going to be given these lemons, we're going to make some lemonade out of this. And I'm going to have those kids work for me, because those kids that are the rough, tough ones, all they want is attention and praise. And once you've figured out what makes them tick, once you figure out what makes what their passion is, what their drive is, make sure you always praise them around other people. They will never forget you. They won't.
Mm-hmm.
They will always appreciate you for that. And that's the best advice I could give to anybody. And I don't care how big your classes are, because like I said, in Dade County, before they had that cap on there, I had 64 kids. And at that time, our school was the third largest school in the United States. We had over 5,340 students.
Wow.
And our poor principal, we had to do a swing shift and everything. And I my principal at the time, I still love that woman to this day. And she goes, Tesco, just make it work. And do what you can, hon. This is all I got, and this is what they gave me to work with. And we were like, okay, let's see. How does it get, you know, and at that time I didn't have access, but I was like, all right. So that's when I always did start using the kids to work in my favor. And putting them in groups really does help. Groups of two, you know, pairs or groups of three. Once you find out their personalities and you put them in those groups together, like if you have a group of three introverted kids, don't go there. They're not going to get anything done. And if you have a group of three extroverts, forget it, because they're not going to shut up. So you have to mix them in groups together, and once you do that, they'll click. And then they take care of it. But then the class runs itself. It really does. Yeah, you're going to have one or two kids that have a bad day, but that one kid that has a bad day, don't have a power trip with them. Don't try to do it. Say, you know what, Johnny, I can tell you're having a really bad day.
Yeah.
Can you come up here for a minute? Pull them aside and say, look, I don't know what's going on, but this is not typically your behavior. Do you want to sit over there by yourself today and just be quiet and I'll leave you alone? And they'll usually tell me, yes, miss, I need that because I'm going to punch somebody. Well, we don't want to have to go to court or anything. Just go over there and just chill, and I promise I'll leave you alone today. How about that? Well, thank you, miss. Appreciate it. And they'll go and they'll sit, because sometimes these kids do have bad days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We don't know what happens.
So, Tiffany, I have to cut you off. I hate to do this, but we only have 30 seconds left, and I want to thank you for being on. And is there just tell us the best way to reach you. If anybody wants to ask you questions or reach you, what's the best way?
You can find me on Facebook at Tiffany Steen. I do have a Facebook page called Bars and Beyond, B-A-R-S and Beyond. You can also email me at Tiffany Steen, TiffanyTheen@gmail.com.
Cool.
All right, great. We are out of time. So thank you so much for joining us. And thanks, Simone. And we will
thank you.
With you again next week. Go ahead, Tiffany.
All right. Thanks again, everyone.
Bye.
Bye-bye.